Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lawson.
At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
That's game time right there. That's game time right there.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. Tonight on the show, the eve of the mandatory minicamp, we'll talk with receiver Chris Hogan about what he hopes to do over the next 3 days. A quarterback study from 2013 on ProFootballFocus.com. We'll talk with the author, Steve Palazzolo, coming up at 8 o'clock. And the 50-yard finish is 12 days away. Organizer Dan Horan joins us at 8:30 to talk about that.
This race is pandemonium! Down to the one, into the end zone. Touchdown, Fred Jackson! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We are back live at One Bills Drive. Good evening. Welcome. Monday night, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO for Monday, June 16th. And very, very, very happy to be back in the studio tonight. Thanks for tuning in. We missed all last week. It's hard for me to even accept that. But we missed all last week. I had a kind of a nasty bout with, believe it or not, shingles. You ever have shingles? Know anything about shingles? I'm the expert now. Not really. I know enough that it's gone, and I'm feeling much better and happy to be back. It was kind of a long, boring week. I want to thank the guys who filled in last week. Mark Kelso filled in last Monday. Brian Koziel, who filled in Tuesday. Chris Brown, Wednesday and Thursday. And, of course, our producer, Jay Harris, who tied it all together. Jay, I'm told it was a rough week for you last week.
No, it was not.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it went really well. Those guys that filled in, I can't thank them enough for coming out at the spur of the moment to fill in each day. Mark Kelso, Brian Koziel, especially Chris Brown. So it was great. But we are glad to have you back here, Murph.
I'm glad to be back. I'm happy to be back and looking forward to... hey, we got a studio audience. That's an addition.
Threw in here last minute.
Well, welcome.
They cheer and they clap.
That's good. It's great to be back, and good to be back with the OTAs ending and the mini camp beginning tomorrow. The mandatory mini camp starts tomorrow here at One Bills Drive. 3 days of nothing but fun and music. No, 3 days of football. In fact, players back tonight in the building for meetings tonight, and then they are on the field tomorrow from 3 p.m. till about 5:30 p.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday. Attendance is mandatory. If anybody's not there tomorrow, then we got a different story. But all are expected to be in attendance, and we're going to have complete coverage here on the radio show throughout the week of the mandatory minicamp, the 3-day minicamp, the next and final phase of the offseason program for Bills players. And, of course, all kinds of coverage on BuffaloBills.com all week long with myself and Chris Brown. So we'll talk about that tonight. And we really want to talk about it from this perspective. We've made it through these first several weeks of offseason conditioning and then OTAs. The OTAs started way back in the last week of May. So about 3 or 4 weeks of OTAs. Now we move into the mandatory minicamp. E.J. Manuel getting most of the reps at quarterback, and this is second year. 10 starts last year. You know the drill. You know what E.J.'s rookie season was all about. And you know, I think you can appreciate how much they've attempted to build around E.J. Manuel this year to bolster the defense, which was pretty good last year, to try to do their best to... you know, give him weapons, including Sammy Watkins this year, and to beef up the offensive line this year. You know, they've tried really hard to build around him. And so we get to the question now on the eve of the minicamp. The question would be about E.J. Manuel. What's your level of confidence in Manuel going into the season? How good do you feel about E.J. Manuel, what he's done in the offseason, what you saw last season in 10 starts, and what you expect to see coming up in the future? Give us a call. Let us know what you think about that. Your level of confidence for E.J. Manuel this season. You can phrase it any way you want. You may want to say, you know, 1 through 10, I'm a 1 on E.J. Manuel as far as how I think he's going to do. I'm a 9, which means you think he's going to do pretty well. Phone lines are open, 803-0550. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can do it via Twitter. You can reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. E.J. Manuel, what's your level of confidence in how he's going to be this year? The lines are open at 803-0550 or toll free, 1-888-550-2550. I, myself, thinking about it a lot over the last week, knowing what's gone into trying to help him out, trying to build around him, knowing what's gone into coaching him up for this year, this during this offseason, I am 70% certain that E.J. Manuel is going to be good this year. He's going to be good enough to win some ball games, more than their share of ball games. I'm not talking about Pro Bowl. I'm not talking about fitting him for his Hall of Fame bus just yet. But I do think, based on what we saw last year, based on the work that he has put in both last year and especially during this offseason, based on what they've learned about him and how he reacts to coaching and the type of offense he wants to run, and based on the weapons they have put around him, including Watkins and potentially Moiaki and potentially an even stronger running game than they had last year and more protection up front. Based on all of that, I'm 70% certain that E.J. Manuel will have success this year. What's your take on that? Do you feel that good, 70%? Do you feel better than that? Or maybe do you feel like it's going to be an uphill climb for E.J.? He was not, and most quarterbacks are not, right out of the box rookies ready to go in the NFL. Most are not. And he, you know, was not ready to succeed last year. Obviously, the injuries had a lot to do with that, making only 10 starts. But maybe you have a thought on what the second year will look like for E.J. Manuel. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, the number. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can do it via Twitter as well, at John Murphy Show. And already a couple of very interesting tweets on this. Not very confident, LOL, says Ari Gold, who tweeted that in. When I asked, what's your level of confidence? James Gleason tweets, scared, very scared. Here's an interesting tweet from Aaron Blaylock. I compare Manuel to Steve McNair. They have a pretty similar style. Weapons plus experience equal inevitable progress. Yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm at. The weapons they put around him and 1 year in the books experience. Code Red tweets 4 out of 10. So that's one way to look at it. 1 to 10 scale, I guess. Buffalo Sports Fan 90 tweets 60%, 65% confident right now. Hopefully I'll be around 80 or 85% by the time the season starts. Yeah, I think we're all in that boat too, by the way, Code Red or Buffalo Sports Fan. I think we're all in that boat, all going to be looking at these preseason games and even into the training camp practices when it's all going to be out there and say, how does EJ look? Do we see progress from a year ago? So I think that's a pretty good point. If you're 60% confident, maybe after training camp and a couple of preseason starts, you feel better than that. Better than that. We'll see. JCW Industries tweets, on a level of 1 to 10, minus 4. There's a lot of differences of opinion on EJ Manuel. UT Chief 360 tweets, we heading to the playoffs, baby. See what I mean? Matthew Rose tweets, I don't think that's fair. I'd like to get a look at him with more complete offense and weapons, 70%. Well, yeah, I mean, it's not fair. We don't know. We're not asking you, you know, grade E.J. Manuel, what he's done this offseason. We're asking you, what's your level of confidence? This is more about you than it is about E.J. It's mostly about your perception of E.J. Manuel as opposed to exactly who E.J. Manuel is. We don't know what he's going to be like this year. We don't know, you know, what he's going to look like in the preseason games or even a training camp. Matthew Rose tweets, if he doesn't play well, then it's on him, though, Spiller and Watkins, plus a good quarterback will get it done. Nicholas Sampson tweets, what's the number to call? Here it is, 803-0550, or outside Buffalo, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Buffalo fan tweets, I have 8 of 10 on EJ. I believe he'll be better. Charlie Oswald, it's 50-50 right now on EJ. They have built around him nicely. Hopefully, at worst, he can manage the game. As I said, I think it's an interesting question because it's not a question of what do you, you know, how does EJ Manuel look or what are you anticipating from EJ Manuel. It's more a question of your perception of EJ Manuel because I know that there's a vastly difference of varying opinion, vastly different varying opinions on E.J. Manuel and whether or not he'll have success in this league, whether or not he will be successful this year. I know that people are all over the map. We see that just in the tweet so far. Let's hear your phone calls on this topic. E.J. Manuel, how confident are you that he will be successful this year? Lines are open. 803-0550 is the number. toll-free 1-888-550-2550. And as always, you can reach us, follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. But get on the phone line. Let us know your level of confidence in E.J. Manuel. It's an interesting question because we only got the 10 games last year. It's an interesting question because E.J. did not set the world on fire last year. He had his moments. He had his good moments. No question about that. You know, moments at the end of the first home game against Carolina, the second Jets game, the Jacksonville game. He was playing very well until he got banged up. He had some good moments. He had some rough moments. The game at Pittsburgh, the game at the Jets in week two. So there's clearly enough evidence based on his 2013 season to bolster either side of the argument, whether you feel very confident in what E.J. Manuel is going to be able to do this year or you feel not confident at all in how successful he'll be. You can make an argument either way based on the 10 starts that he had last year. What you don't know is what's gone on since then. I mean, we've tried to chronicle it. We've talked about the off-season programs he's been involved in, the quarterback camp out in California, the work he's put in here, the assemblage of teammates both in Florida and in Southern California to throw on their own, to work on the offense on their own, the work that he's had so far here and the organized team activities. We've sort of chronicled that. We've showed you some of the highlights of that at BuffaloBills.com. We certainly talked about that over the last few weeks since the real off-season program began, but we don't know how much better E.J. Manuel is going to be. And we won't really start getting a whole lot of concrete evidence until training camp at best, when the pads go on and they have some serious padded practices, or perhaps we even have to wait until the preseason games, first one being Saturday, August 3rd. Anyone else think five preseason games is a good idea, by the way, in that regard? I do. I know Dennis Dixon does, the fourth quarterback on the depth chart now. Anybody trying to win a spot on the roster has to feel good about five preseason games. But even E.J. Manuel has to feel good about more reps under simulated live conditions in a preseason game. Give us your level of confidence in E.J. Manuel, how good he will be this year, and why. Phone lines open. 803-0550 is the number to call, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We'll start with Dan in Angola. Dan, what's your level of confidence in E.J.?
I'm giving him about a 70% too. Just because he had the experience last year, he knows what he's getting into. You know, he's experienced, 10 games anyway. And I think he's going to prepare a little better. So I'm giving him 70%.
Yeah, I'm going 70%. Preparation to me is not an issue with E.J. Work habits, work ethic, preparation, not an issue. We had a couple of calls several months ago on the show. Go ahead. Make your point.
What I mean by that is, with the experience that he had, I know he's a prep guy, very, very well. But now he's had the experience of the year, so now he can prep with that experience.
Gotcha.
Combination of that.
Gotcha. Really good point, Dan. Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Yeah
I gotcha. And to finish what I was saying, EJ works hard. The work ethic is there, I think. And we just had Nate Hackett in here, Nathaniel Hackett, a couple of weeks ago, talked about how eager EJ has been since he walked in the door, really, but especially this past offseason. That's not an issue with EJ Manuel. You know what else is not an issue? Competition. We've had some callers a couple of months ago call in and say, well, wouldn't he be better if he had some competition at training camp or during the offseason? I don't think it would change his preparation at all. I still think he'd be working hard as he does now. That's not the issue with E.J. Manuel. I think what we've seen, his shortcomings in his game, deal with accuracy and decision-making, quick decision-making and correct decision-making. And I think a lot of that will be solved with experience. Obviously, they've worked hard to improve his accuracy. They know a lot more about the types of throws that he's comfortable with, the type of throws that he's capable of. And I think they know a lot more about how he feels about this offense and the parameters of this offense. And now, after a year in the offense and an offseason, an entire offseason in the offense, I think they got to feel pretty good about E.J. Manuel's command of what they're calling and what the play is designed to do and what the role of the quarterback is. Don't forget, this is a pretty sophisticated thing they're trying to do offensively. To run it at the pace they do, as fast as they do, pretty sophisticated, pretty difficult on a rookie quarterback, I would think. And then you've got the read option component which EJ did a lot last year. I think that from based on what I've seen in OTAs, that's going to remain a part of the offense, that kind of decision-making. You know, the quick read, run or pitch. I think he needs to make better decisions in every aspect of that part of the Bills offense. Better decisions on obviously when to step out of bounds, when to give up on a play, better decisions on when to keep it and run, better decisions on when to pitch it out to the running back. That is always also a function of experience that he'll get. So you're right. Preparation, he is better prepared now to run the offense, better prepared now to be the guy. At the helm of an NFL offense. There's no question about that. But what's your level of confidence in EJ Manuel? How good do you feel about him going into the season, going into the offseason and now going into the mandatory minicamp starting tomorrow as the undisputed number one quarterback on the roster? I feel 70% good. Could things go wrong? Absolutely they could go wrong. First and foremost, he has to stay healthy. Secondly, he has to take the next step. I mean, it sounds like a cliche, but he literally has to take the next step in this offense and the next step in his development as a quarterback. So I give it a 70% chance of success. I'm interested to hear from you what you think. EJ Manuel, how confident are you in what he's going to be able to do this year, how successful he'll be? 803-0550, the number. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We'll go to Joab in Oklahoma. Joab, how confident are you about EJ Manuel?
Well, John, thanks for taking my call. I'm actually really confident in EJ. I mean, it's a second year, you know, and he's got a good bunch of great weapons around him. He's got a good receiving core. They got Chandler back, and they got, you know, hopefully CJ healthy and Fred healthy. I mean, my question for you and what I'm thinking is, I mean, my biggest question, I think, for his success is the offensive coordinator, Nathan Hackett. And I was just wondering, in your opinion, I mean, do you think that, I mean, after last year, like, I mean, how much of his success is going to be dependent on Nate Hackett? Do you think Nate Hackett's up to the task to put, like, a good offense together for him?
Yeah, I do. I do think Nate Hackett is up to the task. I think he did a fairly good job last year, too. He also going into his second year now at the helm of an offense. But everywhere you turn around the NFL, people will tell you how in the high regard that Nate Hackett is held in around the league. People know him as a bright, young offensive mind, an innovator, a guy who you know, paid his dues at the NFL level when it came to working with the Bills and working with the Tampa Bay Bucks, and then did a good job with the Syracuse offense. I think Nathaniel Hackett has a clear understanding of what he wants to do. I think now, after 1 year, he has a better understanding of the weapons he has to work with, the weapons at his disposal. A much better sense of what EJ can do, what the running backs can do. I detect that they have a better sense of what they want, how they want to use CJ Spiller as opposed to last year. A healthy CJ Spiller, which they really didn't get much of last year. So, yeah, I think I have confidence in Nathaniel Hackett, and I think it's pretty evident that he and EJ Manuel are on the same page. They're almost like each other's biggest fans. Nate was in here 2 weeks ago and virtually exploded when we talked about EJ, about what he's seen in the offseason, what he's seen so far during the OTAs. If I asked Nate Hackett that question, how confident in you and EJ Manuel this year? I think he would break the confidence meter. I think he'd be over 100%, a lot over 100%. All right, let us know what you think. EJ Manuel, how do you feel about him this year? How confident are you that EJ is going to have success this year? Phone lines open at 803-0550. We'll go to Nicholas in Rochester. Hello, Nicholas. What do you think about EJ? How confident are you?
I'd say I'm pretty confident in him. I think the whole Buffalo Bills organization has put him in a really good spot to succeed with all the weapons they place in front of him.
And I hear what you're saying, and they put him in a good position. But the question, I think, really is, so what do you think of EJ? You know what I mean? Because they have weapons, and now they have a better offensive line. Nobody would dispute that. And now, as we all know, it is up to EJ. And if you can almost take the weapons away and you know, analyze it without the new weapons, without the new toys that they have offensively, and without the new people they have up front on the offensive line, are you confident in EJ himself and his ability to be successful here?
Yeah, I'd say I am. After last year's rookie season, I mean, he definitely showed sparks of greatness, and obviously the injury really, really brought him down, I mean, throughout the season. But, I mean, all the work ethic he's put in, as you've talked about, over the offseason, all the work he's putting in now, I feel like he's in a really good spot to succeed.
I think so, too. All right, Nicholas, thanks. There's a lot to be said for hard work. I think. I mean, there's a lot to be said. There's a lot to be said for your second year in the league as EJ approaches that, for avoiding the run-up to the draft with the All-Star games and the combine and the individual workouts and then the draft hype itself. I think that takes a toll on any player, and I think it may have taken a toll on EJ Manuel last year. I think it definitely took a toll on his ability to immerse himself in the Buffalo Bills offensive playbook in the short amount of time that they had. He couldn't really get his hands on that until last May. And there's a lot to be said, I believe, for his second year in the league with getting the break after the year ended last December, late December, and then coming back, you know, knowing what the offense is, knowing what the terminology is from a quarterback standpoint, and knowing what your capabilities are in the league, what you like to do last year, what maybe you struggled with last year, working on those weaknesses, and having a whole offseason of voluntary conditioning work here and OTAs and beginning tomorrow the mandatory minicamp. I think those are underrated things when it comes to any player's development, maybe most especially when it comes to quarterback development. I think that will all bode well for EJ as he moves into his second year. But we don't know, do we? I mean, is anybody guaranteeing that EJ Manuel will be a success in the league? I can't. Most of our listeners, I don't think, would. Some of our listeners, you know, a couple of callers just said 70%. Feel pretty good about it, 70%. People tweet in, you know, somebody says they have minus four on a scale of 1 to 10. Big Frankie tweets in, I'm 75 to 80% confident he is smart and has the skills. I'm more concerned with his durability than his ability. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, EJ's injuries, different, two different knees, both knees. I don't know the durability is going to be an issue. I mean, if he has the same kind of rough luck that he had this past year, then we'll have to start talking about that. Michael Dubin tweets, better EJ Manuel, better than last year with the weapons provided for him. A big load is off his shoulders. Yeah, I don't get the sense that EJ at least felt like he didn't have enough weapons last year. He has more this year, make no mistake about that. But I don't think there was a sense that, from his standpoint, that he didn't have enough weapons. I think he did. But now there are more places to go with the ball, especially when you look at Sammy Watkins and potentially Mike Williams and second year, by the way, for Robert Woods and Marquise Goodwin. Maybe Moyaki's a part of the offense. I think there are definitely more places to go and definitely a better sense of what he and the rest of the Bills offense can do with the football. So, yeah, durability could be an issue. But I don't think, you know, he was looking around saying, hey, I'm the only one out here last year on offense. I don't think so in any respect. One of his offensive weapons might be Chris Hogan, a wide receiver coming back trying to win a spot on the roster, a guy who has had an outstanding couple of weeks of work in the organized team activities. He's coming up on the show. Going to talk more about quarterbacks and EJ Manuel coming up at 8 o'clock. Steve Palazzolo, who is a senior analyst for ProFootballFocus.com, he has spent the last several weeks doing an exhaustive analytics study of NFL quarterbacks, including EJ Manuel. There are some things he's found that EJ Manuel does well. There are some things, obviously, that EJ Manuel does not do well, along with the other quarterbacks in the league. We're going to talk with Steve Palazzolo about that coming up at 8 o'clock tonight. And at 8:30, we are just 12 days away from the big race that ends at One Bills Drive at the 50-yard line at Ralph Wilson Stadium, the 50-yard finish. The race promoter and organizer, Dan Horan, will join us at 8:30 tonight. We'll squeeze in one more call. Dave in Tonawanda. Dave, your level of confidence with EJ Manuel, what do you think?
Well, I'm thinking about 50-50, and the only reason I say that is because, you know, the two areas where everybody keeps on speaking about that he needs to improve are decision-making and accuracy. And, well, with Fitz being what he was, smart guy, work ethic, good job, but, you know, it's going to be a show me thing for me. If I can see that he's going to improve, then I'll gain more confidence. If I, you know, if he doesn't improve in those two areas, that was the downfall. It probably is the main downfall of a lot of quarterbacks in this league. So it really is a 50-50 until I see something.
Will you be watching training camp video or going to camp or preseason games in an effort to get the answers to those questions, Dave?
Well, as you and I know, it's not always about the preseason. You can look great in the preseason and have a flop or vice versa. So I'll watch it, but you know, I'm not sure how much stock I'll put in it.
Okay. Fair enough. Dave, thanks very much. Yeah, I mean, it'd be the only evidence we get until the season starts September 7th, the preseason games and the work at training camp. I do think we'll have a pretty good sense of how it's going a couple of weeks into preseason, you know, maybe around the time when they come home for the game against Tampa Bay. Obviously, you would think by that point EJ will have maybe three, but at least two games under his belt, preseason games, Preseason, obviously, is not the same as regular season, but it is live game action. We'll have a sense of his command of the offense, I think, and a sense of, you know, his throwing, his accuracy, which many people think is an issue. So I would think that's going to be when training camp ends around, what is it, August 20th, I believe, and when the fourth preseason game comes up on Saturday, August 23rd, I think we're going to get a pretty good sense of where this season is going. It won't be the end of the story for EJ, but certainly it'll be a sense of, you know, if the offseason work that he's put in is taking hold. And not to say he'll be a finished product by then, but I think we'll have a pretty good sense of whether all the offseason work has been worth it for EJ Manuel. A lot of opinions, though, on EJ Manuel. 50-50 confident, 70-30 confident, minus 4 on a scale of 1 to 10 confident in his abilities. I think it's an interesting question, and it's a it's a question that, you know, Bills fans all over ask themselves. I feel pretty good about EJ. I don't feel so good about EJ. You know, people are all over the board on that. We'll resume this discussion as the night goes along. We're going to take a break now and come back. We're going to talk with Chris Hogan, Bills wide receiver, trying to lock down a spot on the Buffalo Bills roster. On the eve of a mandatory minicamp, which starts tomorrow, wide receiver Chris Hogan will be live with us in studio. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The mandatory minicamp starts tomorrow here at One Bills Drive. John Murphy in our broadcast studio at One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. One of the standouts of the first 3 weeks of organized team activity is in studio with us right now, wide receiver Chris Hogan. Chris, thanks for coming by here.
Thanks for having me.
I asked you a couple of weeks ago, I said, Chris, you look bigger. And you said, no, actually, I'm a little smaller. Is that right?
Yeah, I lost a little bit of weight.
What was that, by design, or is that just...
I think it just would help me in the long run. You know, just trying to keep up with these guys on the field and trying to work on my just overall speed.
Chris Hogan, wide receiver for the Bills, in studio with us. If you got a comment or question for Chris, he's with us for the next 10 minutes or so. And the lines are open at 803-0550. Also, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You are here tonight because, as we said, the players are on the field tomorrow for the mandatory minicamp. But you actually had a full team meeting tonight, right? Everybody got together.
Yep.
What was that all about? What goes on there?
We, you know, just some typical stuff, going over the schedule, you know, making sure everyone knows, you know, where to be and what time. You know, we had a little media relations training, just, you know, knowing that the media is definitely going to be on the field and you know, knowing how to compose yourself off the field as well as on the field.
What do you think of that? I mean, you're a guy who's been around, you know, Penn State, at least lacrosse program. Do players need that sort of instruction, do you think?
I think so. I mean, I think it's good. If not, it's a good reminder just to know, you know, just how to... You know, I think most guys on the team know how to conduct themselves in, you know, interviews, and, you know, they've done it countless number of times throughout college and their career in the NFL. So, you know, it's just a reminder, really, just helpful little hints, you know, questions that you might get asked and how to respond to them.
You know, it seems to me that in recent years, when players get in trouble for comments they make, it's not so much talking to mainstream media as much as it is through social media.
Yeah, I mean, that's the crazy part about, you know, today's day and age and in the game. It, you know, social media has become such a huge part of, you know, whatever professional sport it is, or just, you know, just in general. So you really have to, I mean, that was part of our training too, the Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You know, you just have to watch what you say and make sure that everything that you put out there is in a positive light.
You've been around the league. This is, I believe, your fourth year coming up now. You've been around the NFL, Dolphins and Bills. And do you find that do some players, and maybe some players at your position, want to create their own persona, like whether it's through social media or through the regular media? I mean, some guys want attention and want to be interviewed and want that sort of
I think, you know, everyone's out there to create their own brand, you know, everyone. And is
everyone is?
Yeah, I mean, if you're in the NFL and you have that, you know, that jersey on your back and you have Bills, you know, you're creating your own brand name and you have the jersey on the back of your number and everything. And, you know, you want to be able to create your own brand, and obviously in the most positive way you can do that. So, you know, using social media to your advantage is a great way to promote yourself and to promote your team and everything that you're doing.
What's Chris Hogan's brand? What would you like to be your brand?
Man, my brand is that, right now, it's, you know, I'm a hardworking guy. You know, didn't really have, doesn't have much of a background in football, and you know, whatever people don't know that about me, is to know that I'm out there working hard every single day trying to make this football team.
I thought you were going to say 7-Eleven might be your brand.
Oh, I mean, that's in there. That's
it's a big part
that's
of
in the, that's in the profile. Yeah. Absolutely.
I even hear during the OTAs a week or two ago, you'll make a play during practice and somebody, one of your teammates, will yell out 7-Eleven. I mean, three years later, you still hear that.
Yeah, I got that following me wherever I go. Hopefully for the rest of my career, you know, I can keep that up.
Do you ever actually go into a 7-Eleven?
I've been into a couple 7-Elevens.
Like, does anybody say anything? Like,
nah. I mean, I'll get my chops busted a couple times if I walk in there.
Think of the endorsement opportunity. Yeah. Chris Hogan is in studio with us, the Bills receiver. We're talking about the mandatory minicamp, which starts tomorrow. The OTAs, 3 weeks, no pads, practice. But you must feel like you kind of made somewhat of a statement during these last 3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, these practices that we have, you know, it's really all about you know, knowing what you're doing on the field and, you know, putting some good stuff on tape, you know, going into the mini camp and then obviously going into training camp too. So, you know, these OTAs are a good opportunity for you to, you know, get timing down with EJ and all the other quarterbacks and take the time to learn the, you know, all the new stuff that we put in offensively and then special teams, all that kind of stuff. You know, it's a good time. It's a good period to, you know, talk about it and work out what you need to do on the field and prove that, you know what you're doing.
How much changes tomorrow in terms of these practices when you get to the mandatory part of this offseason?
Not a whole lot. I mean, I think a lot of guys are going to be excited. You know, now we have, you know, we weren't really missing that many guys throughout OTAs, but we got a full team here. I think a lot of guys are excited to do this mini camp. And, you know, we got three more practices, really. And then we have this break and then going into training camp. So I think, you know, everyone's going to be pretty excited about these practices going in here. You know, there's going to be, you know, it's going to be up tempo. It's going to be fast. It's going to be fun.
Chris, you mentioned how these OTAs and all this offseason time, a lot of it helps you get acclimated to the offense. Is there very much difference in the offense now as there was a year ago? I mean, I'm sure there's some new wrinkles, maybe some new plays.
Yeah, you know, new wrinkles, new little things that, you know, for us to, you know, help our game as an offense. So really, it's really just building off of what we had last year and, you know, trying to make that better than it was.
How does EJ Manuel look to you during the practices you've seen?
I think he looks great. I mean, I think EJ he's really taken a pretty good leadership role in this offense. And you can tell, you know, just his work ethic, you know, he's, you know, before practice, after practice, you know, his days off, you know, I can see it. I think a lot of other people can see it, that he's really working at his craft at the quarterback.
And I was mentioning this in the first half hour of the show. There's a lot to be said for that, isn't there? And a lot to be said for coming back into the same offense for any player, but especially a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you see guys do that day in and day out. You know, you build a lot of respect, you know, doing that. And, you know, I think that's part of being a professional, though, and being a football player is taking the time to do all that kind of stuff to get better at, you know, your position.
It seems that during the course of these OTAs the last 3 weeks, you've kind of, whether you did it or they've done it for you, your role has become more defined. They're using it a lot as a slot receiver, it seems.
Yeah. You know, I've had a lot of opportunities throughout these OTAs, you know, running with, you know, whoever it is. You know, I think I've made the best of those opportunities that I've been given, and hopefully, you know, I'll just carry those into minicamp and then keep on going through training camp.
How do you like working inside as a slot guy?
I mean, I like it a lot. I mean, I think it's a fun part of the game for me. It involves just, you know, there's a little bit more thinking involved, you know, reading defenses and kind of knowing, you know, what to expect here and, you know, what coverages they're going to give you and that sort of stuff, so.
Is there a lot of decision making on the fly, on the run? I mean, adjusting to what the defense is seeing?
Yeah, you know, it's. I mean, this is the NFL, so I mean, you got to adjust on the fly a number of times. So you just have to, you know, knowing what you're doing is key, and then after that, you know, letting your instincts take over, and you know, the slot is a good. It's a good time.
You know, we were talking about. I was talking to somebody watching OTAs a couple weeks ago about you in particular and watching you out of the slot, and somebody said what you're trying to do is maybe what Wes Welker did with the Patriots and with Denver. I mean, Wes Welker was not a heralded college prospect when he came into the NFL. Playing with a Hall of Fame quarterback obviously helps, but he defined a role for himself and maybe revolutionized the position of a slot receiver. Do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Wes is a guy, you know, even when I wasn't even playing football, is a guy that you know, love to watch just because of, you know, how he worked on the field, you know, because he wasn't going to blow by people with his speed. And he obviously wasn't going to go up over top of people because he was a smaller receiver. But, you know, watching him, you can kind of, you know, try to model your game a little bit after him. And you know, he's definitely changed the face of the slot receiver position for a lot of teams, I think.
I read in an article that's up on our website that in the slot, you consider the first step or first couple of steps as the key to getting open.
Yeah. I mean, man, I mean, just in football in general, I mean, the first step is so huge. I mean, if you have a good first step, you know, you're going to have put yourself in a good opportunity to be able to put yourself where you want to be on the field. And that's obviously something that I was working on this year, you know, trying to have a good first step off the ball and, you know, obviously building up, you know, my top speed and everything.
I've talked to you about this before over the last few months. There's a lot of competition in that wide receiver room. Do you feel it? I mean, does everybody realize you look around the room and say, we've got some talent in it?
Oh, there's a lot of talent in that room right now. You know, but that's the way that you would want it, you know. I think that this room has got a lot of, you know, promise. You know, there's a lot of talent in that room, and we can do some pretty great things, you know, as long as stay together, buy into everything, and obviously just keep competing, stay healthy, and, you know, we can do some pretty good things this season.
Look forward to watching you in the next few days out there. Chris, thanks for coming by here. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Wide receiver Chris Hogan, the Buffalo Bills receiver. The mandatory minicamp start tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock, and we'll have more on that coming up on tomorrow night's show. Take a break and come back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Chris Hogan, Bills wide receiver, 7-11. That was the name bestowed upon him by his teammates with the Miami Dolphins a couple of years ago on Hard Knocks. You know that. And even to this day, a couple of years later, his Buffalo Bills teammates every once in a while will just yell out, 7-11, always open. He had a good couple of OTAs. A guy to watch, I think, moving through the mandatory minicamp that starts tomorrow and, of course, into training camp. Just to see what his spot is on the roster. I mean, you know, you can do the math. Five wide receivers. We've done this on the show before. You look at Robert Woods and Sammy Watkins and Marquise Goodwin and Mike Williams. And now you're talking about who else? Marcus Easley, Chris Hogan, any number of guys. Ramsey's Barden. Who am I forgetting? But there's just a lot of talent there at the receiver spot. And Hogan's going to have to continue to play well to lock down a roster spot. He knows that. I think he acknowledges that. At any rate, we're talking a lot about the Bills' offense tonight, and in particular, talking about E.J. Manuel and how confident are you, not what you think of E.J., but how confident are you about E.J.'s chance of success this year? Phone line's open. We've taken a few calls already, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We've read a couple of tweets about that. There's one from Mike Healy who tweets, not an accurate passer, sure sign of his ultimate demise in the NFL. That would indicate that Mike Healy is not confident, I would guess, that E.J. Manuel will have success. And that's fine. I put my level of confidence at 70%. I feel good. And I asked Chris Hogan, and what's the first thing he went to about E.J. Manuel? His work ethic, the work he puts in. And I think that's his strong suit. And I think that that means a lot in the NFL, work ethic. So there are obviously improvements to be made, and it's going to take a while before we see them. We may have some evidence based on the mandatory minicamp that starts tomorrow, but really more realistically, you're looking at training camp and into the preseason games before any of us can say with confidence that we feel good about where the Bills are with E.J. Manuel. And yet, you know, we're still a month away from training camp. A little bit of Bills news from the courtroom today. Defensive tackle Marcel Darius' court appearance about that alleged car race in Hamburg has been postponed until July 1st. That's according to the Hamburg Town Court. He was scheduled to appear in court today to face a reckless endangerment charge stemming from the crash of his car into a tree in Blaisdell back on May 30th. Darius ticketed for several traffic violations, including drag racing. The accident occurred about a month after the Bills defensive tackle was arrested back home in Alabama. and charged with possession of synthetic marijuana and drug paraphernalia. Darius is expected to attend the three-day mandatory minicamp, which opens tomorrow here in One Bills Drive. We'll see whether or not he talks, a different story, but he is expected to be on the field. That was the plan that Doug Marrone laid out a couple of weeks ago when he told the media that he told Marcell Dareus to take a couple of weeks off of the OTAs, come back for the mandatory minicamp, which is tomorrow. A couple of others expected to be here were guys who had missed the OTAs, the voluntary part of the offseason. Alan Branch, defensive tackle, Manny Lawson, outside linebacker, both of them expected to be here for the mandatory minicamp, which starts tomorrow. 3:15, they'll be on the field. We're going to have to scramble, but we promise we'll get some interviews on the air. We'll have some discussion of the highlights from the mandatory minicamp tomorrow. And, of course, all the highlights that we have will be visible at BuffaloBills.com tomorrow night. All right, a break for the top of the hour. We'll talk more about E.J. Manuel after the top of the hour with Steve Palazzolo of ProFootballFocus.com. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin!
I like that kind of party, baby!
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller! You can't stop him! How did he do it? How did he do it?
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the show, we spent a large chunk of the first hour talking about E.J. Manuel, the Bills quarterback, and how good you feel about E.J. as he moves into his second season. We'll continue that discussion, and you can join in the discussion this hour as well. On the line with us is the senior analyst for ProFootballFocus.com. It's a football analytics site, and this month on ProFootballFocus.com, the month of June, quarterback month. In-depth, detailed analysis of all the quarterbacks who played in the NFL in the 2013 season. The man behind this project, a frequent guest on the show, a good friend of the show, Steve Palazzolo, senior analyst for Pro Football Focus. Steve, thanks for being on the air with us tonight. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Always enjoy coming on with you guys.
Quarterback month. What a great idea. Tell me how this came about.
Yeah, it was one of those things. June's kind of... I don't think there's any real dead period in the NFL, but if there is one, I guess June and into July would qualify. And it was one of those things where in the offseason we've got a little bit more time to dig into all the data that we have. So I've spent the last couple months just kind of trying to organize it and trying to come up with some useful charts and just some data that it just tries to separate the quarterbacks in every situation possible. So we decided, you know what, there's plenty of information there. We'll try to post about an article a day. Call it quarterback month, and I think what it gives is just a really good snapshot of each quarterback's strengths and weaknesses, different tendencies that their own team has, that they have individually, and I do think it's just a fascinating look at quarterbacks around the league.
Yeah, quarterback month continues at ProFootballFocus.com, and we're about halfway through the month, but without giving away any secrets, Steve, overall, were there any surprises, like big surprises, as you did this analysis of how the quarterbacks performed last year?
I wouldn't say that there were major surprises, but there was definitely a lot of interesting information. Guys like Andy Dalton was one of the most fascinating cases. He's a guy that, if you look at his splits, as polarizing as he is probably in Cincinnati and around the league, you know, his splits are just as polarizing. You know, he's a guy that if you put four-man pressure on him, for instance, he's actually one of the best in the league, but if you put blitz pressure against him, one of the worst in the league. So there's things like that where you see a guy just has a massive strength in one area, a massive weakness in another area, and it's just interesting to see those differences. But as far as, you know, a lot of the stuff is expected. Peyton Manning sitting there at the top of a lot of the lists, along with Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers and some of the other top quarterbacks in the league. So not a ton of surprises. But you do really get to see the breakdowns of each quarterback's strengths and weaknesses.
I guess this is almost asking the same question in a different way, but do you find that most of these results, the analytics results, confirm what most people already believe about quarterbacks? For instance, you know, Eli Manning is a straight pocket passer, and Cam Newton can run around and make plays. Do the numbers and the analytics support what most people get from observation about these quarterbacks?
Yeah, in a lot of cases, yes, but there's one example. Ryan Tannehill is an interesting case where I think Dolphins fans have complained pretty loudly that he can't throw the deep ball and he hasn't been able to connect to Mike Wallace. But actually, when you look at our numbers, his raw numbers aren't great when it comes to passer rating and completion percentage on the deep passes, but his grades are actually pretty good. And the reason for the disconnect there is we grade the actual throw rather than the result. So there were a lot of situations this year where Tannehill threw some pretty good deep balls that were either dropped or just simply weren't completed for various reasons. And, you know, there's things like that where there's a perception about a quarterback where actually our grades differ a little bit from it and bring a little intelligence to the situation. I think Tony Romo is another great example, another guy who everybody always likes to say chokes in the fourth quarter, but he was one of our, I think it was in the top 10 amongst fourth quarter quarterbacks last season. So little things like that seem to buck the conventional wisdom. But again, for the most part, you'll see a lot of what your eyes tell you is pretty true.
I think that Romo part that you mentioned in the fourth quarter, that would surprise a lot of people, right? I mean, that's just almost conventional wisdom. Oh, Tony Romo, not a clutch performer. You're saying the numbers show that he is?
Yeah, we had him as one of the better graded quarterbacks in the fourth quarter. And of course, you know, I think there were a lot of games last year where, yes, there was a late game interception, but you know, one of them was to Cole Beasley, which was a miscommunication. It's tough to completely pin that on the quarterback. So there's a lot of things where, especially in the Twitter age, when people want to believe something, it's very easy for them to run with it. So everybody wants to believe that Romo's going to choke in the fourth quarter, but he was one of two quarterbacks to have at least 10 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. We graded him eighth in the league overall from a grade standpoint. He had 106.1 passer rating, so the conventional stats as well as our grades kind of back up that overall he was a pretty good fourth quarter performer, even though, yes, there were some bad passes in there.
Live on the line with Steve Palazzolo. He is senior analyst for ProFootballFocus.com. Quarterback month on ProFootballFocus.com this month as they look at all the quarterbacks in the NFL and sort of take a look inside the numbers from last season. Steve, we've had a discussion on this show. Obviously, we focus a lot on E.J. Manuel and his rookie year in the league. A lot of discussion a couple of months ago about what would constitute a good year for E.J. Manuel. I guess I maintain, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at it, but I came up with a quarterback rating metric. I thought if EJ can be a quarterback rating of 88 or better, the Bills would have a good chance of being a winning team. What do you think of that sort of analysis?
Well, yeah, I definitely think I think you almost take any quarterback in the league except maybe your top echelon guys. If you say 88 is that threshold, I think that gives the team an excellent chance of winning, especially if the Bills can continue with what they've done defensively or what they did defensively last season. So I think 88 is a great number. I do think it's probably a little bit aggressive for Manuel, but I think if he gets there, especially in his second season, yeah, that would be a huge positive for the Bills.
I guess I looked at it this way. Last year, I think it was in the AFC, five of the six playoff quarterbacks had quarterback rating of 88 or better.
Yeah, and ratings are really interesting. It's an interesting number, and you know, it's usually assigned to quarterbacks, and I think we all look at it as a quarterback stat. I think it's better used as an indicator of what the entire passing offense did, and that's why when you look at a lot of our charts, you'll see a guy that might have a 106 passer rating, but maybe a minus two grade for us, meaning you know he had a lot of poor throws, or he had a lot of easy throws, and maybe benefited from the offensive around him. So when you look at rating, I don't even necessarily pin that on the quarterback so much as I pin it on the entire passing offense. And when you look at some of the weapons that the Bills have and the addition of Sammy Watkins, they could go a long way into getting Manuel into taking that big next step.
But your grade, the PFF grade, is more accurate in judging the quarterback, you're saying. Tell me why that is, the quarterback as opposed to the entire passing offense.
Yeah, because when we're looking at the grade, we're trying to evaluate the quarterback's role in the play. So, you know, if the quarterback just throws a 3-yard dump off to the running back, say it's Spiller, and you know, Spiller jukes four guys and takes it to the house for 65 for a 65-yard touchdown. The quarterback's going to have a one-for-one, 65 yards. The touchdown, obviously, it's going to look fascinating on his passer rating. He's going to look great, but it's really nothing that he did. Whereas if Spiller gets tackled for 3 yards, obviously the rating doesn't change. I mean, the rating changes a ton, but the quarterback's role in that doesn't change at all. On the other hand, you throw a deep pass, hit a guy in stride 40 yards downfield, probably would have been a deep touchdown, but a guy drops it. We're definitely going to give that a huge positive grade, assuming it was thrown well and it was the receiver's fault that he dropped it. Whereas, again, the passer rating is going to be your 0 for 1, passer rating of 39.6, your generic 0 for 1 there. So we really feel that if you're trying to evaluate quarterback play, grade is the best way of doing it. And then rating, like I said, was a good way of saying, okay, this is how well the entire offense did on these particular passing plays. Because that takes into account having time to throw the ball so the offensive line's involved and also having receivers that can do something with after the catch.
All right, here comes, I always ask you a question about process and methodology, but you didn't actually go back and look at all these quarterbacks again, did you? Did you not have like a database to work with from your work during the season itself?
Oh, no, we have a massive database, and that's where all this stuff's pulled out of. So
right.
The real hard work that we do is in-season, getting all these games graded and adding all this information into the database as the season goes along. But because we're doing so much of that, it's very tough to sit mid-season and kind of reflect on things, and that's
right.
Why we spend the off-season to really dig into it a little bit deeper. One thing I am doing, though, and within the database, one of my favorite things to do is look at all a quarterback's best throws and all of his worst throws and kind of determine, okay, what's this guy really good at? What's he not so good at? And again, just get a really good snapshot of what a guy can do. So the second half of quarterback month is going to be more individualized and more of a individual profiles on each of the quarterbacks, and you'll be able to see all of these numbers for each individual quarterback all in one place.
Quarterback month on ProFootballFocus.com, and senior analyst Steve Palazzolo is live on the line with us. Well, you mentioned time to throw. It turns out from what I've read of the time to throw metric you used, E.J. Manuel does a pretty good job in being an effective quarterback without a lot of time to throw last year. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, so one of the things about time to throw, I think when we originally started charting this in 2011, a lot of people used it and said, okay, the guys that have a long time to throw have a lot of time from their offensive line, rather than, you know, what we've actually found is the time to throw is really just determining how the quarterback plays, so how he plays the game and what the scheme's asking him to do. So you'll see guys like Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, always at the top of the league as far as the quickest time to throw. And it's not because they're under pressure all the time. It's because they're quick decision makers, getting the ball out within the flow of the offense. And they're always in that 2.3, 2.4 range. They get the ball, catch it, and get rid of it. Then you see guys at the bottom of the range, guys like Russell Wilson, Cam Newton, even Andrew Luck in there a little bit, guys who average about 3-plus seconds per pass. And these are guys that, you know, extend plays a little bit more, and either sometimes they'll take deeper drops trying to get the ball down the field, but they're more of your scrambling-type quarterbacks. EJ kind of falls in the middle of those, and he was pretty successful from a rating standpoint on his quicker passes. If he gets the ball out in less than 2 seconds, his rating was 96.6. Now, his grade wasn't unbelievable for us, mostly because, you know, it's a lot of easy throws, and there was a lot of yards after the catch from his receivers and things like that. But from a production standpoint for the Bills, that was probably his best way to go, getting that ball out within 2 seconds, which is, you know, pretty quick release. And he did that right around the league average amount of time. And like I said, that was their most successful time to throw in the passing game.
Hope I'm not putting you on the spot, but when it comes to quarterback play against the pressure, against the blitz, can you tell us how E.J. Manuel fared in that metric, Steve?
Yeah, definitely. One of the most fascinating things when you think about rookie quarterbacks, everybody says, well, you know, they're going to be facing a lot of different looks and defensive coordinators are going to send the house at them. Well, E.J. Manuel was blitzed the second fewest times of any quarterback in the league last year, right behind Peyton Manning. So I think it's pretty well understood around the league that teams are afraid to blitz Peyton Manning because he always makes the right decision and he always finds the open man. And once you take somebody out of coverage, you know, you're playing with fire against Peyton. But I thought it was very interesting that Manuel only faced a blitz 24% of the time, which was, like I said, second fewest in the league. So it was one of those things where either teams felt that they had the ability to sit back on him a little bit and make him make mistakes, or yeah, that just wasn't what the strategy called for. But he was okay against the blitz, rating of 85.3. So results wise, it worked out pretty well. Minus 4.4 in our grading system, so a little bit below average. Against pressure, he was a little bit worse. And the difference between a blitz and pressure, when we define pressure, that's when the defense actually puts pressure on the quarterback, whether it does come from the blitz or whether it does come from a four-man rush. Against pressure, he was actually pretty typical of an NFL quarterback. NFL QB rating on when they're pressured is about 65, which is just, you know, fascinating to think about how much pressure affects the passing game.
Yeah,
his rating was 60.6 with a minus 10.7 grade. So definitely below average versus pressure. But again, that's a little bit that's pretty much the standard around the league.
I hope you have this information somewhere close at hand. And if you don't, I understand, Steve. But is there anything about EJ Manuel's game that you think stands out in a negative sense? And again, we're talking about the 2013 season. But what metric did he really kind of lag behind the rest of the NFL's quarterbacks in last year?
Yeah, I have his entire breakdown in front of me, so I'll try to sort through it. The things that I pointed out as weaknesses, he does have a bit of a reputation as a guy that can scramble, get out of the pocket. He's pretty athletic, but he was actually really poor in that area last year. So when he scrambled or got out of the pocket, he was one of our worst graded quarterbacks when the play broke down. And he was, and again, this is just passes on the run. This doesn't include scrambles where he actually ran the ball, but on scrambles where he tried to pass the ball, he actually had a rating of 14.6 and a minus 7.2 grade on those situations. There weren't a lot of them, but he was 5 for 15 passing in those situations with an interception. So it's one of those things that was kind of bucks a little bit of conventional wisdom for him.
Yeah.
The other thing that he was a little poor at from a route standpoint, and this will be breaking down later in the week, we broke down how well each quarterback throws each individual route, and he was pretty poor on go routes. He completed only 9 out of his 38 attempts on them. He did get 5 touchdowns on them, got his rating up to 84.3, but from a grade standpoint, minus 7.7, which was one of the lowest in the league. And I think the first Jets game comes to mind where the Jets pressed the line and just dared him to throw deep, and he had a lot of trouble giving his receivers a chance to make a play on the ball on the go routes.
How about on the other side of the coin? How about which metrics were to EJ's advantage? What did he do well based on the analysis that you've done?
Well, from a route standpoint, he was actually really good on post routes, particularly working off of play action. When they used play action and he threw the post, he actually was he was only 2 for 6, but there were 3 drops in there. So that's a situation where the rating might not back up the actual grade. I think his rating was only 69.4. Uh-huh. We had him with a positive grade because he did throw the ball accurately down the field on those post routes and just had 3 drops on the, in those situations. So that was one positive for him. He was pretty good in the short passing game as well. In the 1 to 10 yard range was probably his. And I know it sounds like, oh, you know, he just throws the ball short. But when we're grading these 1 to 10 yard passes, we're looking at ball location and the ability to move the chains. And he was actually pretty good in the shorter range compared to some of the deeper ranges. So I'd say those were 2 of the things that stood out as positives for Manuel in his first season.
Hey, Steve, as far as the Pro Football Focus Quarterback Month, what's left to come? What are some of the most interesting aspects you're going to be looking at moving forward?
Well, the rest of this week we're going to have league-wide breakdowns. Like I said, we'll do each route individually, so you'll be able to see, again, who the best quarterbacks are on goes, posts, slants, outs, the whole thing. We're going to break down how well each quarterback throws against base package versus nickel versus dime, so how many defensive backs they're facing. There's also going to be a section that just breaks down QB tendencies, and it's not so much how well they did, but what they did. So things like how often Manuel was blitzed, you'll be able to see how that stacks up against the rest of the league and in a number of different situations. And then, like I said earlier, the second half of the month is going to be all individual. So all these numbers that I have on Manuel right now, you'll be able to get that in a couple neat pictures that just kind of sort his entire game in just 3 or 4 different pictures, all these different situations. So that's pretty much what we got planned for the rest of the month.
I look forward to that. And you'll have every quarterback in the league kind of broken down their whole game based on all of these different measurements, huh?
Yeah, we're even throwing Thaddeus Lewis in there just to have a comparison on. I think it's not so much going to be an EJ Manuel article. It'll be Manuel and Lewis together. You can compare and contrast how both of them did you get a really good snapshot of the entire Bills offense for 2013.
I look forward to reading that, Steve. As always, we thank you for your time tonight. It's great work, and we'll keep watching and seeing what you guys come up with. Thanks very much for doing this tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John. I always appreciate it.
Steve Palazzolo is senior analyst for ProFootballFocus.com. Quarterback month, as we've said, he's got measurements up there for things like down and distance, time to throw. EJ looks pretty good in that regard. But and then he said the second half of the month, he'll have the quarterbacks broken down individually so you can look at them at each quarterback through all of these metrics. So instead of saying to yourself, I think EJ Manuel does this well, or I think Ryan Tannehill is not very good at this, you look at the analytics. You look at the numbers. It'll tell you exactly what they do. These guys do a great job. ProFootballFocus.com. You can subscribe to an upper level of analytics if you want, or you can just look at the website and take what they give you for free. ProFootballFocus.com. And Steve Palazzolo is the senior analyst, a team of great analysts that work on that website. We thank him for joining us tonight. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're here until 9 o'clock tonight. Coming up around the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk about an event coming up in 12 days, the 50-yard finish at Ralph Wilson Stadium, a chance to run and finish the run on the 50-yard line at Ralph Wilson Stadium coming up on June 28th. So stick around for that. A couple of other NFL notes today. The phone lines, by the way, open. If you want to resume our discussion of E.J. Manuel and your level of confidence in E.J. Manuel, again, not so much E.J.'s this or that, but what you think about E.J. Manuel's chances for success this year. Give us a call. 803-0550 is the number. From outside Buffalo, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. If you want to tweet in your thoughts, you can do that at John Murphy Show. A lot of people taking advantage of that tonight on the summer evening. Jason Scott tweets in 100%, his level of confidence is 100%. He goes on to say, EJ had a 66.9% accuracy rate in his college career. He will get back to that level in the NFL. Well, I hope you're right, but I don't know. That's pretty good. It's a different game, especially when it comes to accuracy, when it comes to completing passes. You all know the discussion about tighter windows in the NFL, how things close much more quickly than they do in college football. So that's why you'd wonder if he's going to be able to complete passes at that high level, 67% as a collegian. I don't know. We'll see. Nota Saint tweets, as long as he is injury-free and Sammy Watkins too, one will complement the other. No question about that, but that doesn't really answer the question about E.J. Manuel and your level of confidence in E.J. Manuel. You feel good about his second season in the league as we sit on the eve of the mandatory minicamp starting tomorrow? We've seen him a little bit in the OTAs. He's looked okay. Not great. He's looked okay. Nathaniel Hackett on our show 2 weeks ago assures us that he's miles ahead of where he was a year ago at this time and even a year ago during the season in terms of grasp of the offense, understanding of the offense. No one questions EJ's work ethic. No one questions his dedication to his craft. But there are some holes to fill, obviously, in his game. And that's kind of what these OTAs and minicamps are all about. Around the league, a couple of other notes of note around the league. Brandon Flowers, last Friday, released by the Kansas City Chiefs. Kind of a shocking release for the former Pro Bowl cornerback. Well, the report today is that Brandon Flowers has been contacted by 10 teams already. Only the Baltimore Ravens, Minnesota Vikings, Atlanta Falcons, and Detroit Lions were named in the report coming out of Baltimore. Most of these teams appear to be just gathering information. But Brandon Flowers is out there, a very talented defensive back out there on the street. You would think he will not stay out there on the street very much longer. Vernon Davis, San Francisco 49ers tight end, is going to hold out of their mandatory minicamp this week. And he has written down his reasons. He was the guest columnist on Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback this week. And Vernon Davis wrote, quote, "It's all about getting paid what you deserve. It's not that complicated." Vernon Davis will be absent from the 49ers minicamp when it opens tomorrow. And he says he just wants to make more money. The end of a really solid NFL career. Dallas Clark retiring after 11 seasons. He'll hold a news conference tomorrow with the Indianapolis Colts, the team where he spent 9 years establishing himself as one of the league's solid tight ends. Clark set franchise records for career receptions and receiving touchdowns and a tight end. He and Peyton Manning both left the team after the 2011 season, and his numbers dipped without Peyton Manning on the roster. Dallas Clark will make it official tomorrow, announcing his retirement. And the Dallas Cowboys have signed their first-round draft pick. Zach Martin, the Notre Dame offensive lineman, 16th pick overall, got a four-year deal worth $8.7 million, $4.8 million signing bonus. The team has officially announced the signing. Some of the news around the league. Some thoughts on E.J. Manuel from a caller, Jeff in Buffalo. Jeff, give us your thoughts. What do you think, your level of confidence in E.J. Manuel?
I'm extremely excited and looking forward to the situation. I think that being in, you know, we just never, I guess maybe it's because of the syndrome that we had with our quarterbacks in the past, that a lot of people are negative because we really haven't given this guy a chance. And we've had some poor quarterback play, and we've given him way more opportunity than E.J. Manuel has. He's got a short leash, but I think he's going to be an outstanding quarterback because he's got all the things around him, and we're going into the right direction. And you just got to start being more positive because I think he's really going to be a good quarterback. As long as, you know, and I listen to you almost every night, but I won't call back to October, and I'll just, you know, we can rehash this again.
All right, I look forward to that call, Jeff. I hope you're right. To say that E.J.'s on a short leash, I think, is not entirely true. We don't know how long that leash is. So far, to date, E.J.'s been on a pretty, you know, the right size leash, let me say. They started the 10 games, started when he was healthy last year, and they went into the offseason very early in the offseason saying that he was a starter this year. That is a long leash, and I think it is warranted because we did not see enough of them. They have invested a lot in E.J. in terms of a premium draft pick and a lot of time and effort, but I think it's the right leash, but it's certainly not a short leash for E.J. Manuel. No one's talking about benching him, at least no one with any authority on the matter. So I wouldn't say it's accurate to say that he hasn't had the kind of long leash that other quarterback prospects have had. He's got to produce, leash or no leash. He's got to produce, or that leash will eventually run out. But I think to date, he's had the right amount of leeway to make his case, to stake his claim on that quarterback job. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the 50-yard finish 12 days away right here at Ralph Wilson Stadium. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Here until 9 o'clock tonight with the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. The mandatory minicamp starts tomorrow. We've got all kinds of coverage coming up on that at BuffaloBills.com. And, of course, on our show tomorrow night, we'll talk to some players and hear from head coach Doug Marrone tomorrow. We talked a lot about E.J. Manuel tonight. Manuel, your thoughts on his chances of success. A couple of tweets. Tisa tweets, I think he meant a short leash with the fans, not the front office. Yeah. All right, I get that. Bills Bus Jake tweets, I'm 75% sure on E.J. would be higher if he actually had some competition at the position to push him to excel. Chemistry with wide receivers key. I've said this before. I said this earlier tonight. I don't think that's an issue. I don't think E.J. needs competition to excel. I mean, in a general sense, do we all benefit from that? Yeah. Is that his problem? No. He's not coasting. He's not taking it easy because he doesn't view it as competition. Let me tell you something. They would, if E.J. is not playing well as the season goes, if we get deep into the season, they might pull the trigger on him and put Thad Lewis in there. That's competition. That's how much they think of Thad Lewis. But EJ, that's not what's holding him back. I think that's a misconception. I do not believe that's what's holding back E.J. Manuel, lack of competition. That's my thought. He may feel differently. We'll take more phone calls on that as the evening moves along. We're here until 9 tonight, 803-0550, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. It's become one of the big events of the summer, the 50-yard finish, a half marathon, a 5K race, and a kids race that ends on the 50-yard line at Ralph Wilson Stadium. Joining us on the line from Eclipse Multisport is the organizer, Dan Horan. Hello, Dan. Thanks for being on the show with us tonight.
Oh, thank you, John. I'm glad to be on your show. Love your show, and appreciate you having me on.
Thanks a lot for coming on. The 50-yard finish is coming up just 12 days away now, Saturday, June 28th. By my recollection, Dan, this is the third year for this race. Is that correct?
Yes, it is, John. It's our third year, and right now it will be our largest field that we've ever had.
How many? How many have registered already?
We've gone over 1,500, and I think we're closing in on 1,600. Probably by the end of the night. So this is a wonderful growth for the event. And like you said, 12 days away. So we're hoping the top 2,000.
Yeah, we can get you 100 registrants tonight just from our show. I think we probably have 100 people listening tonight, Dan. Good point.
Oh, hey, Dan. I appreciate it, and I hope one of them is your lovely wife, Mary.
I got to talk to her about that. Hey, Dan, this came about. You stepped in a couple of years ago, right, when the race was planned and then things kind of fell through. This kind of like fell into your lap a couple of years ago, didn't it?
Yeah, in a way. I think the gentleman that I had before was from Indiana, and he fumbled the ball. And I was on vacation with my family. We had heard from afar what was going on. And I reached out to the Convention Visitors Bureau and was able to get in touch with the Bills. And I just basically said, a race is a race. We can put it together. We've done it before, but we never planned on putting one together with only 6 days to go. But we were able to do it, but it was with so many of the right people getting together. First and foremost, the Bills for trusting us to be able to help to manage an event like this, and then with the Convention Visitors Bureau and some good local sponsors such as Runner's Roost who helped finance it. It really came together nicely, and it really ended up just being a great community event, because that's what my wife and I wanted from the beginning to the end, just to help fulfill some people who had put a lot of time in the training and traveling to let them just cross the finish line on the 50-yard line in Ralph Wilson Stadium.
Yeah, and your group, Dan Horan is our guest, by the way, of Eclipse Multisport, and you put on triathlons and 5K races, but there's something about this venue that makes this special. Like most good races, this has got to be memorable for any runner to finish at the 50-yard line in Ralph Wilson Stadium, I would think.
Oh, I agree 100%. I mean, to come down that tunnel, and it gives you, there's a little bit of descent in the tunnel, as you know, working with the Bills. And so you pick up momentum, and then you enter the field, and there it is, what everyone has seen for years and years, the product, and you're actually part of the field at that point. And from the end zone, you have a 50-yard sprint, and really, I would say 80% of the people really go into a full sprint, are so excited, and they get to the finish line. And last year, we had people dropping to their knees and kissing the 50-yard line, and us being friendly and helpful, but saying, there's folks behind you. So it was a fun problem to have.
Yeah, and all the while, you allow spectators, family, friends, to come into the stadium and cheer them on as well, right?
Yes, and that's what the Bills have really made accessible to the fans, is they've really, when we talk about planning every year, the one variable that they're very forthright about is making it a family event. So they really like having the 5K part of the event, because if a husband or wife plans on training and then another one would say, okay, I'll do the 5K, and then the kids race is really taking on a life of its own. So it really becomes a family friendly event, and working with the Bills organization, that has made it so exciting for us that just families come, and the spectators probably double what the participants are. So it's a really large crowd on the field, and that stadium being so big, it can take it all in.
So it's a half marathon, a 5K, and you mentioned the kids race. Tell me about the kids race, what that's going to look like, Dan.
Well, John, there are over 200 children signed up already. We were actually just preparing for about 150, so we just had to call the company that's producing the medals and ask for more medals to be made. We had to reach out to AdPro Sports that is doing a wonderful job on the shirts. They're making more shirts for the kids' race, because we want every child to have a medal at the finish line. We want every child to have a race shirt, and we want them to all have that great experience of finishing at the 50, because it's a one-mile race for the kids, and they're finishing on the exact same finish line as the adults.
Wow. It is coming up in 12 days, the 50-yard finish on Saturday, June 28th, here at Ralph Wilson Stadium. The race starts here at the stadium, too. Where do you start the race from, Dan?
We start the race in front of Ralph Wilson Stadium on Abbott Road.
Okay.
And one of the things I want to say, John, with all the construction, everyone's hearing all this news, what I'm excited about is the fact that people get to see the progress before the stadium is complete. And so it's going to be an invigorating feeling to run the half marathon, get to see a lot of the stadium before the completion of the construction, and then come into the tunnel. And like I said before, the Bills have been great trying to help us along with saying, you know what, we have construction far enough along that we can keep the same course that we've had for the last 2 years. So it's going to be nice for the athletes just to see where the stadium is at this point in construction.
And half marathon starts at 7 in the morning. When will most of the finishers be coming in, do you think, to the 50-yard line?
Last year, I think our slowest competitor was close to 4 hours. We're working with the town of Orchard Park on trying to keep some time limits, but we want to make it friendly for everyone. So we're really trying to, the police department in Orchard Park has been wonderful to deal with, the chief and the assistant chief. So we're trying to keep it to a 4-hour limit for the participants. So we're trying to get everyone through the last part of the race, at least by 11 o'clock.
And when the race does end, you have basically a party right on the field, right? A short post-race party right on the field at Ralph Wilson Stadium.
Well, I don't know if you said short, but I will say this. Working with the Bills and have a partner such a great global organization as the Buffalo Bills, I mean, they're really taking over the party end of this for us, and they've really upped the ante this year, and a lot of sponsors have come on board. And with us having Eclipse Multisports on, we're kind of small, and we're a holistic family type of company, and we're always seeking out sponsors. And with a race such as this race and having a partner as the Buffalo Bills and seeing that logo, there are actually a lot of businesses trying to get involved. And I've learned that sometimes it's a nice problem to say no to certain sponsors because there's so much loyalties with a lot of the Bills partners. That there are so many of the existing partners that have stepped up on behalf of the Bills that are actually going to make this post-race party the best one we've ever had.
The 50-yard finish is Saturday, June 28th. It's just 12 days away. And, Dan, you'll have pre-race registration and picking up packets. They can do that the day before, starting Friday the 27th, right?
Yes. My lovely wife, Ann, is in charge of all that. She's the brains behind this operation, and she will be running the pre-registration packet pickup at at the field house, and online registration will be open until I think midnight the night before, the leading into midnight of the 28th. So Ann really keeps everything in line, streamlines everyone's applications online and walk-ups, and she makes it look easy. How she does it, I do not know, but yeah, we'll be able to do all that before.
And the pre-race registration packet pickup at what we now call the Ad Pro Sports Training Center, the field house here at One Bills Drive, starting Friday, June 27th. And for more information, people can go to the website, right, buffalobills.com. There's a little tab on the right side with all the information about the 50-yard finish.
Yes, they can go to the Buffalo Bills website. They can also go to eclipsemultisport.com because actually that race right now is headlining our website, so they can get it off either the Buffalo Bills website or the Eclipse website.
And then those of us who work here, we take it for granted sometimes. In fact, I drove in the One Bills Drive today, and there was looked like a family in their minivan out in the parking lot taking pictures of the family with the stadium behind them. Those of us who work here or worked around here for years take it for granted, but it is a special venue and to many people a very important landmark. So it's got to be cool to run a race that finishes right on the 50-yard line inside the stadium, I would think.
Oh, well, with setup and breakdown, and my wife and I do 19 events a year, it kind of becomes, you try to do it without thinking too much. You know, okay, this is what we have to do. This is how we get it done. But when we, every year, coming around this time, the end of June, to be able to work inside that stadium and just look up and catch your breath, I'm in awe every time I'm in that stadium. It's amazing, and it's amazing to be part of an event there. So I'm very humbled by it, but I get excited going through that tunnel. Whether we're putting up fences, race clocks, or the finish line arch, I'm just motivated the whole time just because I'm inside the stadium.
Well, it's coming up soon, Dan. Good luck with this. Thank you for coming on the show tonight to talk with us about it. We appreciate it.
Oh, John, always a pleasure, and thank you for your time.
Sure. Dan Horan of Eclipse Multisport. They're the ones running the 50-yard finish, a half marathon, a 5K run, and a kids' race. It's coming up Saturday, June 28th, right here at Ralph Wilson Stadium. You finish at the 50-yard line at Ralph Wilson Stadium. More information on our website, buffalobills.com. The 50-yard finish just 12 days away on Saturday, June 28th. Take a break. Come back with more. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Dan Horan for joining us. The 50-yard finish is 12 days away right here at One Bills Drive. Go to buffalobills.com for more information on that. Hey, I should have mentioned this right off the top. Next Monday, we are going to be live at the NOCO Express store at Main Street, Youngs Road in Williamsville, Amherst, right near the ECC North Campus. There was an erroneous story in Saturday's paper that it was tonight. It is not. It was originally scheduled for tonight, but we moved it back about 7 or 8 days ago. So now it is next Monday night, a week from tonight, when we will be live doing this show on Monday, June 23rd at the NOCO Express Store, Main Street and Young's Road, 7 to 9 p.m. Fred Jackson's going to be there with us. The Bills running back will be there as well. Signing autographs, yep. Meeting and greeting fans, yep. We'll talk more about it in the next few nights. But a week from tonight, Monday, June 23rd, at the NOCO Express Store, Main Street, Young's Road in Williamsville. Tomorrow, the start of the mandatory minicamp, 3 days. The last 3 days of the off-season workouts before training camp. Looking forward to watching a lot. Now, I missed last week because I was ill, but we talked a little bit with Chris Hogan about this. I want to see if he continues his development, and he took some big steps forward, I believe, in the OTAs first couple of weeks. Want to see EJ Manuel. I want to see him get better than he played in the OTAs. Not that it's going to matter. They're going to go to training camp with him as a number one, but I think I'd feel better if he has a good 3 days of camp, of a mandatory mini camp. Want to continue to see Booby Dixon, the running back, the former 49er, who we had on the show a couple weeks ago. His infectious enthusiasm, his tough running between the tackles. Again, they're running without pads, and there's no tackling, but I think he was a standout. Want to see how that goes. I want to see more of Cyrus Kwanjo, who did not get a lot of reps with the ones during the OTAs. I want to see him get reps with the ones during the mini camp that starts tomorrow. Buffalo Bills second-round draft pick Cyrus Kwanjo. On the defense, Tony Moyaki. I thought Tony Moyaki got off to a great start early on in the OTAs, and then not as much as the OTAs went along. On the defensive side of the ball, I want to see Marcel Darius. I want to see him in shape, ready to contribute, and ready to put all of his troubled offseason behind him. I want to see where Corey Graham is at. He's had an outstanding OTA so far. I want to see Alan Branch and Manny Lawson, who skipped the voluntary workouts. I want to see them there. And I want to keep an eye on the middle linebacker spot with Brandon Spikes, the starter, and really a strong outing from Preston Brown, the rookie. I want to see him see how he progresses. So there will be a lot to look at tomorrow, and we will cover it all tomorrow on this radio show and, of course, at BuffaloBills.com. We want to thank our presenting sponsor tonight, NOCO, family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer tonight is Pete Cargis, our producer, Jay Harris, and the Bills Director of Broadcasting, Jeff Matthews. We'll see you tomorrow, 7 o'clock, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.